Time for me to interrupt your lunch again to start our last session. A couple of people have asked for a list of everyone in your class, the freshman class. We've got a list and we're making copies of it, so we'll have that by the time we're finished with lunch. Also, when I was introducing people on Monday, I didn't introduce Jasmine Higgins, who's back in the corner, one of the people who have been filming for Ohio Government Telecommunications for us the whole week. So better late than never. Our next speaker is Tony Bledsoe. He is the Legislative Inspector General from the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee office, and we'll be speaking to you about your ethics and reporting requirements and what that office does.
Congratulations, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today and for me to be able to represent the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee and the Office of the Legislative Inspector General. I'm going to cover a number of topics today. Please do not interrupt eating to take notes or try to remember everything I'm going to cover today. We'll have many opportunities to get to know each other over the next 2 years. And for today, we've brought some handy grids that boil down the topics I'm going to talk about today. And those will be back there with my general counsel, Jennifer Lockwood. Now, you know, usually when I get to meet with legislators and legislators-elect, my sessions often quickly turn into a question and answer session. Certainly if I'm invited out to the caucus retreats in January, that's what will happen. But for right now, LSC is recording this session. So I'm going to respectfully request that we hold questions for a few moments until I get through my remarks, and then I'm going to ask LSC to turn off the camera. That way, you can ask questions, talk about what's on your mind on the topic of ethics without it being recorded for posterity or your future political opponents. So if you can just bear with me, I'll go through a number of topics and then we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. So who are we? Well, the Office of the Legislative Inspector General is the administrative office for the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee. How many of you, through your orientation period, have heard of us? Excellent. Well, the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee, it's a bipartisan committee of the General Assembly. It's made up of 12 members. The leaders serve on JLEC. And as I said, it's bipartisan. 6 Republicans, 6 Democrats, regardless of the number of seats held by either political party. And it's equally divided between the chambers. The Legislative Inspector General, well, I'm appointed by those 12 members of the Ethics Committee. Joining me today is my General Counsel, Jennifer Lockwood. Jennifer is a proud OSU undergrad graduate, as well as a graduate of The Ohio State University College of Law. In addition to being an excellent attorney, she's also a certified fraud examiner. Now, Jennifer calls you, it's going to be very, very rare for her to be wearing that hat. She's calling to properly ask for information and things in order to advise you. So, her status certified fraud examiner, please don't let that give you pause. Now, what's the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee responsible for? Well, you've probably heard a little bit from the lobbying community and others about what our responsibilities are. But I want to go over them generally. We're responsible for administering the financial disclosure requirements and to advise all of you on the ethics laws, with respect to all members, candidates, members-elect, and the staff of the General Assembly and the respective legislative agencies. We also administer the lobbying laws. Some of our friends were in the last session from the lobbying community. They probably showed you our website and how to search for lobbyists. As of today, there are just shy of 1,600 registered lobbyists who work with our office. They represent nearly 1,900 interests in this state. Think about that. 1,600 lobbyists representing nearly 1,900 interests. Every Ohioan is in some way represented by a multitude of lobbyists through their associations, their unions, their corporations, and their civic associations. The committee is also authorized to investigate violations of the ethics laws, to hold hearings, and make referrals. When the committee gets to that point, in my opinion, we have failed in some way. If we've reached the point where we have active investigations and potential referrals, somehow we have failed, because our role is to prevent ethics violations. But there are those times where, despite all the training that we do, there will be individuals who set out to violate Ohio's ethics laws, and that day comes where that hearing has to happen or that referral. So what's the ethics law? It was adopted on January 1st, 1974. In Washington, a number of scandals going on, as you can imagine, Watergate, etc. And the states adopted and modernized their ethics laws. Our ethics law then, 1974. It's been revised a few times since then. The purpose of the ethics law was to create new financial disclosure requirements and to put new restrictions on our conduct within our official capacity as public servants. The ethics law is found in the Ohio Revised Code and also in the Joint Legislative Code of Ethics. In January, you will have the opportunity to vote, consider and vote on a joint resolution. It's the internal ethics resolution of the General Assembly. And it's your opportunity to weigh in on that, those standards. And we are subject to that as well as to the Ohio Revised Code. Now, the ethics law essentially prohibits legislators and legislative staff from doing a number of things. It prohibits us from participating in our official capacity in a way that involves our direct interests, the direct interests of our immediate family, or our close business associates. For example, I can't authorize a contract relative to my family's company. Seems pretty simple. Can't authorize it, I can't use my influence to secure it. And I also can't use my influence to try to secure a public contract that I might have an interest in for the next year. So that's the public contracting provision. It's a very serious one that involves the criminal code. So if you're involved in public contracts at all, we're going to reach out to you. Jennifer's done a great job of reviewing your financial statements, and we'll reach out to you and work with you to help you navigate that topic of public contract. There's a degree of complexity to that. Now, that's a conflict of interest relative to public contracting. A handful of you will be involved in public contracting, but you will all be called upon to introduce legislation, consider legislation, and vote on legislation. So for conflict of interest for members of the General Assembly, the real issue we're looking at is what legislative matters can you be involved in? We ask ourselves this. Will that legislation in some way provide you or your family with a definite particular benefit? What does that mean? Well, to determine that, we look to how large is the class you're part of. If your spouse is a school teacher, we're not going to wall you off from voting on everything involving education. That's a pretty large class of individuals, school teachers. And so you're going to be okay on that. But what if it's something more narrow? It only impacts a small group of business interests in the state. All right, we're going to look at that. Small group, interest is getting pretty particular. And then we look to whether or not it's definite. Will that legislation result in a definite benefit or avoidance of a detriment to that interest? Now, at the local level, for those of you who have worked at the Ohio Ethics Commission, our sister agency, and voted on city council matters or matters before the county commissioners, you probably encounter conflicts of interest more often than you will in the General Assembly. It's a citizen legislature. We find a way forward to balance bringing in your outside experiences into this body, bring it into debate, bringing it into those votes, and balancing that against the harm of its definite and direct interests. The reality is, actual conflicts of interest in the legislature when it comes to voting are fairly rare. But we're going to be there to help you navigate that. And there may be times we say it's not an actual conflict of interest. You're not going to be the subject of a complaint from the ethics body. You're not going to be referred to the prosecutor. But there may be an appearance issue here. And we'll work with your team within your caucus to advise you on that and perhaps recommend that you not vote on something. Now, all of you probably interacted with our fine friends in the lobbying community this week, as we know. So I want to talk about some very specific restrictions that are in play and are covered in the grids that you'll have there when you leave. And then we'll also be providing you with a handy-dandy laminated version to carry in your pocket with all these rules on it in January. For those 1,600 lobbyists, we are restricted from accepting more than $75 in gifts from any one lobbyist in a calendar year. I say this constantly at all the trainings Jennifer does as well. It seems pretty simple, but at a refresher training yesterday, I asked the question, and one young man, a legislative employee, I pointed to him and said, what's the limit? He said, $1,000. Oh. He and I had a little chat afterwards. But it's a $75 limit on what we can accept from lobbyists in calendar years. In gifts, also a $75 limit on what we can accept in meals and beverages from any one lobbyist in a year. And finally, you are prohibited, absolutely prohibited, from accepting personal travel from a lobbyist. It doesn't matter how long we've known them, how we've known them, these rules are in place. Two exceptions to these lobbying limits. If you're related to them by blood, or if you're related to them by marriage. Yeah, I didn't really check the marital status of all of you, but I will say this. If any of you are single, and you get to a point where you're thinking about dating a lobbyist, come see me. We go over all these rules, and here's some laughing. I've had so many of these meetings in my 15 years at JLEC. Many of them often result in marriages. Sometimes they result in elopements, because when I sit there and look at the individuals and say, I'm sorry, you're still subject to the $75 limit. Personal travel is a problem. You're going to have to kind of track the meals and beverages. I actually had a situation where after this meeting, a few weeks went by, and I got a text saying that the couple, happy couple, was now married, and these rules would no longer apply. But absent that relationship, we always have to be cognizant of these rules. So, again, there are nearly 1,600 currently registered lobbyists with JLEC. In my opinion, lobbying is a vital service, and in my experience with these folks, nearly all of them are ethical and professional people who want to direct you the right way. You can go to ohiolobbying.com and search for them by name, employer, and industry. I think Rick Aish last session explained to you how this can be useful to you for identifying the interests in your district. It can be great when you're getting ready to introduce legislation. You can go in, search by industry to identify who the potential stakeholders may be and to reach out to them. You can also search for your own name at this website, type it in, and it's going to show you any lobbying expenditures that have been reported for your benefit. For newly elected members, your names will not show there. They will be loaded in the system, and come January 1, any lobbying expenditures for your benefit are going to start to be reported in the system. Just want to bring your attention to one thing. I often talk in my sessions about the rules on lobbyists. 75, no personal travel. Well, in the ethics law, we also have a restriction that those of you who are from the local level probably recall. The substantial and improper standard. We cannot accept gifts or meals and beverages which are substantial and improper. Well, what does that mean? It's not defined in code. Now, the Ethics Commission, because it doesn't have a $75 limit like we do with lobbyists, they try to interpret it, and they do a pretty good job. Sometimes they call it the Bob Evans rule. If a meal is at Bob Evans, it's allowable, but if it's at Mitchell Steakhouse, it's not. A gift of a plaque is allowable, a crystal and vases is not. I don't expect you to navigate those kind of things. That's what we're here for. If you're interacting with individuals who are not lobbyists, but clearly seem to be interested in matters before the General Assembly, and they're taking you to dinner frequently, if they're providing you with gifts, and you think, I'm starting to get into the hundreds of dollars here, reach out to us, reach out to your counsel. That way we can talk through the issue with you, identify if this is a problem, and maybe suggest some limits on that for you. So, other prohibitions to keep in mind, the ban on honorarium. How many of you know what an honorarium is? Actually, we're on camera. You don't have to raise your hands. Well, an honorarium, at its most basic, is a payment for a speech or attendance at a panel, a seminar, a conference. We are all prohibited from being paid or given things of substantial value, in our definition, it's anything over $25, to appear at places, to speak and participate in surveys and panels. You'll have these offers. They'll come in from people who don't understand this rule. It's a very serious prohibition under Ohio's ethics laws. One of the reasons JLEC exists is this state was embroiled in a scandal in the early 1990s involving honorarium. People were taking significant amounts of payments for speaking engagements. They were allowed under Ohio law, as long as you only took $500 for speaking engagement. But people got in mind, and Dr. Sykes, you probably remember this as one of people pointing out that this was a problem, were no longer taking $500 for me speaking here today. Well, how many are in this room? Quite a few folks. The law says they can take $500 from a source for a speaking engagement. Well, there's a source, there's a source, there's a source, there's a source. I'd walk out of here with a stack of checks. And they called it the pancaking scandal because they'd be stacked like pancakes. Ultimately, this scandal, again, JLEC was created, came into existence in 1994. By 1996, the recently departed Speaker of the House had been convicted relative to the scandal. So if people are offering me things of value to speak, contact the council, contact me. We will run interference on that for you. Finally, we are prohibited from representing clients, employers, or our own for-profit endeavors before state agencies. What's that really mean? We can't be lobbyists. Our fine friends in the state of Texas, as I recall, legislators there can actually be paid lobbyists before their executive agencies. And that would be a very valuable ability to market, I suppose. But here in Ohio, we're prohibited from doing so. That extends to the lawyers. If you're engaged in the practice of law, you're prohibited from representing clients before state agencies. It's a prohibition that's in place so that there can be no question about the use of our influence relative to those agencies. Each of these prohibitions boils down to a restriction on the use of state resources, including your influence for personal gain. In addition to influence, we also restrict the use of other state resources, those tangible resources, staff time, state letterhead, email, the office space, our title of office. These are restrictions in play that mean those resources should be used for a public purpose and not for personal gain. Seems pretty simple and straightforward, and I'm taking up your time to talk about it. Why is that? Well, as events unfold and requests come into your office, you're going to find yourself asking, can I do this? Can my staff do this? This doesn't seem wrong. For example, charitable organizations will frequently come to legislators and ask, please help us. They have a noble cause. Please help us. Please solicit contributions to our charity. Well, the reality is legislators are not prohibited from soliciting contributions to charitable organizations. Well, what you can't do is use your title of office or other influence or resources. But you can see, it seems perfectly legitimate. And when you first think about it, why shouldn't I be able to use my title to help out this great charitable organization in my district? The challenge there is, there are other charitable organizations in your district, and we then are using our title to benefit one, but not others. So we wall off each title. But we recognize the importance of being able to help charitable organizations. So we find a way forward for you to be able to help in other ways without the use of your title. You'll hear the term honorary chair quite frequently. And finally, on prohibitions, I want to talk about something very specific to legislators. If you're an officer, a trustee, or a manager of a not-for-profit or an educational institution, there's a specific prohibition that's been on the books over 100 years that says that a person who meets one of those criteria, officer, trustee, or manager, whether compensated or not, as part of an organization that receives funds from the state treasury, is ineligible to serve in the General Assembly. Now, again, Jennifer's done a great job of going through your financial statements, putting together a synopsis for us. Don't panic. We're going to reach out to you, see if it's going to be a problem for individual members. We'll work one-on-one with you on this. We may come to a point where we ask individuals to step down from a board. In other situations, we'll be able to find that they don't, in fact, receive general funds from the state treasury. Maybe they have a contract with the state, and that's going to be allowable. So don't panic on that, but expect for a few of you that the ethics office is going to call you. Just do a friendly check-in, and we want to help you as you navigate that particular section. I've talked a lot about prohibitions. I need to get this quickly, and you've got questions. The ethics law is not just about prohibitions. From my standpoint, the most important part of the ethics law is the resources it makes available to all of you. I can't say this enough. At JLEC, we are not a gotcha agency. We are not. When you hear about ethics committees in Washington or maybe in other states or in other jurisdictions, there are those who are gotcha entities. We are not. Absolutely not. Our goal, as I started with, is to prevent inadvertent violations of the ethics law. Where those violations do occur, we want to address them in a common sense manner. We're not here to put out press releases. We're not here to drive people before the committee. It's not who we are. We respond to requests for advice on a daily basis. We answered over 3,000 ethics questions last year. Very important here. Your questions to us and our answers to you are confidential as a matter of law. You can reveal them. We cannot. They are confidential. Now, if you present us with a question that is brand new to our committee, I may ask you if I can go to my committee and request an advisory opinion. That opinion will be public, but your name won't be part of it. Now, we're on track to, again, answer over 3,000 ethics questions this year. Only one requires an advisory opinion. So in almost all cases, you call us, you're going to get an answer within 24 hours, usually within moments of calling. We're going to work through it and get back to you. There'll be times when you're heading into the chamber, and your caucus counsel, I know Mr. Lenzo is here today, will be calling me, texting occasionally, I may just put that up, say, Tony, give me a call. We are going to be there to work with you on these conflict of interest questions. We're going to address it and get back to you immediately. So, again, you'll get a quick response, confidential as a matter of law. Now, JLEC has a lot of tools in our toolbox, but I think the most important one, and one that is a carrot to encourage people to reach out to us, keeps our numbers high on these calls, is this. When we give you an answer, based on the facts you present to us, you have both criminal and civil immunity under Ohio law. So if you call in and ask, can I vote on this? And you give us the facts, and we say yes. And later, someone makes an issue of it, you have immunity. Same way, if we say yes, you can pursue a state contract within these confines, within these parameters. If someone makes an issue of it, you have immunity. But as my friends at Caucus Council like to point out, for the immunity to apply, it's very important to do this. You have to follow the advice given. So, whenever I say things like that, people laugh. There's nothing I fear I ever say that hasn't actually happened. There have been opportunities where people said immunity, and the feds say, well, we told you not to do that. And we do document every contact with legislators and legislative staff. He says, in our advisory role, we're essentially your in-house ethics law firm. We're going to answer your individual questions, and we're also going to put out general guidance to the membership and the lobbying community on events they are planning. For example, I saw some of you there. Those OSU Michigan tickets, you were offered the opportunity to accept. Now, long before that offer was made to you, we looked at the ethics laws. And we had to determine something. And we had to look at this, and the question is, essentially, those tickets are $195 each. $195 each. Do you have to reimburse for those? The answer is no. The tickets were not given by a lobbyist, and they were not given in exchange for specific legislative action or future legislative action. We would call that bribery. So they are, in fact, an allowable gift from Ohio State to you. But public transparency will be served. Come May, you're going to disclose the Ohio State University and those tickets on your financial disclosure statements. The public is aware of the tickets and that you did receive these. And you do, of course, have the option to voluntarily reimburse the university those tickets, thereby not having a disclosure requirement. They were an allowable gift. But before you could be offered those, we worked with Ohio State. Going forward, you're going to see guidance documents from us on all kinds of topics. Season ticket purchase, holiday gift guidance, employment seeking, national conferences, constituent services, campaign activity, coordinating your calendars, private, campaign, official. There'll be advice to you and your staff that allows you to have one calendar. It makes life a lot simpler for all of you. And we're going to put out these guidance memorandum. And I'll have members pull me aside and say, Tony, why are you wasting your time putting out things that seem to be common sense? For example, we all know we can't sell our Ohio State football tickets for a profit. Yet, twice, I've had to go to the courthouse because that has happened. So our role is obviously to put out guidance to alert you to the unobvious potential violations of the ethics laws, but also those which for most of us would be obvious violation. We couldn't do this without our partners, the Caucus Council. We work daily with the Caucus Council to identify the potential issues, answer your questions, and where those inadvertent violations I mentioned a moment ago occur, to come up with a just and common sense resolution to provide to the committee. I can't express enough my gratitude to the Caucus Council. They do so much work on the ethics front, including summarizing those sometimes lengthy legalese JLEC memorandum for all of you. So we appreciate that. For a new legislator, your first interaction with JLEC was filing that candidate financial disclosure statement. Now, you were kind of on your own on that, many of you. But when you file in May as a member, you're going to have a team ready to assist you. The Caucus Council will be available to review the statement before you file with JLEC. Our staff, Jennifer and I, will be available to review that statement before it is filed with JLEC to make sure it is completely in order to the best of our ability before it gets filed. That way you avoid an amendment process later. Sometimes those can be used for political purposes, those amendments. So we want to make sure the statement's filed correctly and accurately at first. We're also going to provide you with a breakdown of your lobbying expenditures so you can reflect that on your form. The filing of the financial disclosure statement and the resources that come into play on that symbolize for me that when it comes to ethics compliance in the General Assembly, you're not on your own. You may have been on your own before, you're not anymore. In the General Assembly, it really is a team effort.